again, this is whatever we're talking about, Mummer's going to be today, and it's a little rock.
We'll try to at least make sure we have a handle on the basic topics. So essentially, we started trying to understand how it's possible, or if it's possible, and to what extent it's possible, that somebody who is a Jew by birth and by original religion, can he end up disqualifying himself for Shechita and for other mitzvahs? And we talked about various questions and various levels. So one could be a mumer l'te'avon in a limited sense, that he just is driven by desire for non-kosher food, let's say, and therefore he's going to pursue that. But he doesn't have a antagonistic attitude, and he's just as happy to eat kosher food if it was equally available. And started to discuss how could it be that that shechita could be viable. Why don't we worry that maybe he's going to mess it up and he's not going to take any efforts to avoid that? So it's one thing to say that if he's in a restaurant and he has an option of kosher or non-kosher, then they're equally good, he'll go for the kosher. But when he's responsible for the process, how can we trust him? So just to quickly go back to that point for a second. So we discussed, there are a couple of possibilities. It could be that there is an overall chazaka that allows us either to assume that most shechitas done by somebody who's capable are going to be kosher, and therefore that's enough to trust. Or it could be that he has ne'amanus, that even though from an Eidos perspective, one would think that he is chashud, and he is suspect in this area, nonetheless, it sounds like the language of the Rambam, he has ne'amanus anyway. And the Rambam explicitly says that this person, his shechita, is believable. And that, as Rav Soloveitchik emphasized, may have to do with the fact that Eidecha ne'aman b'yisurin is simply a different standard of testimony completely. It's not in the normal rules of Eidos. So when we say you need two Eidim for Davar Shebe'erva and Bisurin, one Eid is good, it's not just a numerical difference, it's a whole qualitative difference. And Rav Soloveitchik emphasized that when the Rambam highlighted that even this Rasha, so to speak, is going to be acceptable, what he was saying is that the fact that a woman is acceptable, that we know. That's Tosfos. There are a minority of Rishonim who disagree, but almost all the Rishonim, Schechter has a very interesting story about this, which I would tell just except for the problem of how long it would take. We wouldn't have much time for anything else, but maybe a different time, be happy to, it could be a Sunday topic, I'd be happy to fill you in the story about that. But most of the Rishonim maintain that Eidecha Nemi Bisurin applies to women also. So Rav Soloveitchik was noting that the Rambam, by emphasizing here, he was saying it's a bigger chiddush, that Eidecha Nemi Bisurin is a different standard. It's not the same as Eidos. So you see, yes, even somebody who has a status of a non-aid is kosher, so a woman is also kosher. But a rasha is a whole different kind of problem. A rasha is a problem in the credibility. Right? The woman is perfectly credible, she just has a status issue vis-a-vis Eidos. But the bigger chiddush here is that even somebody whose credibility is impugned, apparently the status of Eidecha Adem B'Bisurin is a completely different kind of process. But there are others who, the Ra'ah and the Rashba, have a difference of opinion about what is the key factor here. And what it seems like, it could be it's a combination of all of them. That he has a reduced ne'amanus in Chanami, but together with the fact that there are certain chazakas in play, so we can trust him with all that put together. And one of the chazakas also is the assumption that somebody on his specific level of disobedience here, his limited level of disobedience, that we can take the premise that as flawed as he is, he's not going to be lo shava keterev achalisura, that when it's possible for him to go the kosher route, he's going to go the kosher route, and that's itself a chazaka. Okay, so that's as far as somebody with a more limited mumras. But what about somebody who's more openly defined? So then things get more complicated. What's called mumrahachis, what's called a mumrachalatarakula. And we spoke about that a little bit, some of the possibilities. I think yesterday we left off with the question of how do you define yourself as a mumra? So this was an important question for a lot of reasons, but also what does it reflect about the definition of mummer? So let's say a mummer for an aveira, like let's say Chol Shabbos. So how do you become a mummer? So this was a machlokas rishona, and it probably reflects a question as to what really mummer is. Is a mummer just a sinner? Is a mummer a habitual sinner? Is a mummer reflecting a certain attitude? So, the Mishnah in Daf Yud Daled tells us that Ashochet B'Shabbos Yivyom HaKippurim Afal Pish Mischayv B'Nafsho Shchitaso K'sher. And so here you have somebody who is committing a big avera, and yet the shchita is good. So that prompts the question. So, isn't he a mummer? And apparently an intentional mummer? So Tosfos asks this question. Tosfos over here on the top of Yudal Amud Aleph, because the context sounds a few bemezid. So how could that be? Tema bemezid heich shchitaso k'shera b'hamumer l'chal shabasos aser l'achol mishchitaso.
We're saying that a mumer is anyone that's doing an avera.
Well, that's the question. We don't know how we define a mumer yet, but it sounds like this guy is a mumer, and apparently his shchita is acceptable. So how could that be? So Tosfos offers a few possible distinctions. Tosfos says, I'm skipping around, Tosfos the Yesh Lomar, the Hasim for Hasiya v'Hachavitzina. Well, maybe it's a question of whether this is in public or not, that we're talking about Chol Shabbos, you're only a mummer in public. Maybe this is in private. That's itself an interesting question, why we have that distinction. And we mentioned that presumably it has to do with the extra chumrah of Shabbos. Why is Shabbos more than any other Avera? Why is that a mumra l'chol tarah kula? So presumably because there's a statement that's being made. And that statement is specifically in public. So if he has enough respect for the system that at least in public, he's not going to be mechal Shabbos, that's a different story. So maybe here it's Bitsina. Or, more significantly for our purpose here, we are Yishlomar, again, we're now towards about a third of the way down. Yishlomar, the Mishum Pamachas Lo Chashiv Mummer. That one time doesn't make you a mummer. The Tosfos goes on to take this point further. And that's the last line. Tosfos also, b'chad zimna l'isr shchitaso, that one time is not going to make it shchitaso. Now the Rambam, if you saw the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos, and that was, we mentioned yesterday, it was a useful source to read, because in addition to saying things directly relevant to this Mishnah and our sugi here, but he goes through the whole concept, and a part of what we've been looking at since we started is seeing the concept of Hakol Shochtin as one framework, so that Perush HaMishnayos, the Rambam, is very helpful. He addresses it in that context. So the question is, he sounds like you are a mummer right away. Now, he doesn't answer the question here directly of, therefore, how could this work? And you saw also the Or Zaruah was more in line with Tosfos, where one time doesn't do it, and three times does it, and in the middle we're not sure exactly. Yeah, it was quoting the Or Zaruah. So this raises a question on a couple levels, in addition to the technical question of just how does this work. So it seems like this is a little bit reflective of what the concept of mumris is about. Is it establishing that a person is a habitual sinner? Or is it reflecting an attitude? If it's reflecting an attitude, then maybe once he engages in this behavior, he's already displayed a certain attitude. It's already showing that he views things a certain way. So it could be that that's the machlokas here. But in terms of the technical issues of this Mishnah, so the Matrix or Eloi has a piece about this, which is this typical charifus and brilliance. What I'm going to say in the next few minutes, I'm not claiming it's exactly the way he presents it, but inspired by his discussion of it. So it's not exactly the same. You can read it if you want to tell me, but this is inspired by the Matrix presentation. You could note the following, that Tosfos we see is bothered by the question of how could this shechita end up being good if the person is a mummer through the very act that he's doing, and therefore has to say that he's not going to become a mummer yet. While the Rambam doesn't seem to be bothered by this. So one could say that this relates to Lashitasam. What's the issue here? That if you say that a mummer ultimately dino ka'akum, that a mummer is going to have the status of an idolater, so what's wrong with the shechita of an idolater? If we say that the issue is that he's not a bar zvicha, that's the position of Tosfos, so maybe Tosfos is going to have a problem here also. Because if he became a mummer right away, so then he doesn't have the status of Shechitas Yisrael. So you don't have a bar zvicha that's shechting this. So Tosfos has to explain that he's not a mummer right away. Because otherwise you're locked into a problem. According to the Rambam, the status of the mummer is like an akum, and an akum creates a shechita psula. But otherwise, the akum could have been a valid shechita. The action is theoretically acceptable, but his affirmative status as an akum creates the problem. So maybe there's room to say that you don't have to worry about a lack of Shechitas Yisrael here like Tosfos is worried about, because there's no need for Shechitas Yisrael. There's just a problem that the Akum's defining of this Shechita is going to mess it up. But when he started the Shechita, he didn't have the din of an Akum. And therefore, maybe we can say that the Shechita is defined by the intention of the person who performed the Shechita. So the person who performed the Shechita at that time was the Yisrael. And maybe that's what allows the Rambam not to worry about this issue. Perhaps. Now, presumably, it would be different. Here we're talking about Shabbos, but if it was L'Avad Azara, so that is also defined by its intent. And he discusses that again, not claiming this exactly the way he presents it, but it's also discussed over there in the Major Three Eloi. And one could say also, if you recall, we discussed the Rambam's position that the Shechita of an Akum, the fact that it's Metame, that's only the Rabbanan, according, or he thinks it should be the Rabbanan. And he says, because Shechita for Avodah Zarah itself is only Metame the Rabbanan. So it's hard to believe this is worse. But it could be, it's the Rambam L'Shita, so he has to say that, because if you right away become the mummer of one act, so if it's for Avodah Zarah, then presumably that's going to define the Shechita. So by definition, anyone who's shechting for Avodah Zarah, that itself is going to make it metame on a level midrabanan, like a din of Avodah Zarah. So how could Shechitas Akum be worse than that? If the very act of shechting it for Avodah Zarah is going to only be midrabanan. Because by definition, as soon as he shechts, it's going to be dinu ka'akum, and that's going to make it daraisa. So it's got to be the conclusion he comes to that even in Akum Mamish, when he shechts, the tumma is only derabbanan. Okay? It's an interesting point. But in any event, so we see here that there are a couple of different ways to approach the psul of mamir when it comes broader. That once we're not talking about a mamir l'chol tarakul or a mamir l'haches, so we saw, the Rishonim discussed this yesterday, that there are a couple of different reasons why the shechita might be possible. There is either the functional reason that Rashi mentions and the Ran mentions, that maybe we have to assume he's going to be menabel biyadayim. Maybe he will purposely mess up the shechita. Or Tosfos, that he's not considered a bar zvicha. Tosfos lumps him in with an akum. But then we saw that even within that, there are two ways to say it. That maybe it's simply a din in bar zvicha. You're not called a bar zvicha if you have remove the halachic system, or at least regarding this area. Or maybe no, maybe it's more like the Rambam's part, that an akum is possible, and the mummer has the status of an akum. And then the question is that status automatic because he no longer relates to the halachic code, or is that status a knas? And we mentioned that it's a machlokas rishonim, whether the psol of a mummer is a psol deraisa or psol derabanan. And that seems to flow from that question. That is, it simply he's defined himself in a way the shechita is automatically no good. Or, no, it's that shechita could have been good, but we make a knas for whatever reason. So this idea of a knas and an onesh brings up a whole other aspect here, that it becomes maybe more connected to just how intentional the Aveira was. Because, or what the consequence of the Aveira is in the broader picture. That if this is something which is harmful to Jewish society, either because Chazal wants to create a deterrent, or because this individual is actively interfering with the communal discipline. So that could connect to why we would have a knas, why Chazal would impose a policy, even if it isn't otherwise there, even if it isn't automatically there. So that's also going to be relevant to that question. It's also going to be relevant then to determining how the various circumstances apply. So that gets also to the question of apikoros. Right? So if somebody, his issue is more philosophical rather than practical. It's not so much that he's an avarian, but his philosophy is in denial of the Ikari Amuna. So where does that fit in? So here was the machlokes, my real attitude that Apikores, who otherwise is halacha observant, does not pasul shchita. And others felt differently. The Maharil. And it gets to the question of what exactly is our concern here? You know, is our concern a disconnect from the halachic system? That's automatic. Or is it a matter of public policy?
Sorry,
Maharil
said that an apikoros is not disconnected halachically.
Right. Let's say he is practicing halachically, but
just doesn't have the belief in Hashem.
Right.
So if he says that it's okay, then it seems that he is his understanding of what constitutes a mumar would be a disconnect from halacha.
Perhaps, but a practical disconnect from halacha, or maybe just the fact that he doesn't care. Well, the apikoros is willing to care in this case. Hi.
Would there be further nafkamina, I mean, if you want to discuss an understanding of Amuna as or its place in halacha?
Yeah, there is, and you know, it goes in two directions. You know, the whole question of the halacha's place in defining Amuna, and vice versa. So, the assumption that we know that we have a obligation of Amuna and what exactly that entails. We have different views in Rishonim how exactly to formulate it. You know, the Rambam's position of Yigimel Ikrim has become accepted the halacha as a matter of policy, because here we find that there are potentially halachic ramifications of what is defined as required amuna. So there is a convergence here between halachic and philosophical issues. Hi.
There's also, I'm talking about this a little, and say this is also pretty relevant to today, where a lot of the non-religious community isn't, not like the halachas in terms of...
Correct, right, so assessing where that comes from becomes a very big issue, right, and to what extent it's a matter of policy and to what extent it's kind of automatic. So when it comes to the importance of the Ikari Amuna as far as this is concerned, so you find that there probably are different components to it. You know, on the one hand, the Rambam talks about the Ikari Amuna as crucial for Klal Yisrael. And Reb Chaim is quoted as having understood in the Rambam that even if somebody... Peshogeg, if somebody for no fault of his own is lacking in the accurate amuna, so Reb Chaim phrased it, "Nebach apikoros zeichan apikoros," meaning that even if somebody, unfortunately, what can you do? It's not his fault, but that's just the way he was taught, or that's the conclusion he came to erroneously. Still considered to be an apikoros. However, it probably depends on what purpose we're talking about. The way the Rambam talks about the full appreciation of Olam Haba and the message of the Torah, so it's clear that this becomes an actual need and not just something we can credit you with or blame you for. So we understand why it's not going to matter how you got there, it's going to be something that's necessary. So from that perspective, that's part of the picture. And it's also interesting, the question of what is the Ikari Amuna in the first place? You know, because presumably the whole Torah is important. Right? So how do we set aside anything as an Ikar or not? So some explain, there are many books written about the Gimel Ikrim. I remember Jacob Weinberg, who was the Rashi of Ner Yisrael, as a sefer in the Ikari Amuna. And he and others explain that we don't endorse denying any part of the Torah, but when we call something an Ikar, it means that we understand that this is crucial to making our religion make sense. And if you don't believe that God gave the Torah, so then what's the whole point? And if you don't believe in the Schar V'Onesh, don't believe in certain basic things, so then whole religion is not going to hold up. So it seems to me that's what we're talking about when something rises to the level of an Ikar Emunah. So clearly it is crucial that these true beliefs are actually going to be a part of the context that the religious Jew experiences. But as far as the negative attitude that we have to the individual, so that should be much more calibrated to intent and also to effect, because the main chumrah that comes with apikorsis is the preaching of that belief, and the preaching of that belief specifically to undermine the Torah. So the tremendous negativity we bring towards the act of apikoros is, one would assume, calibrated to those two elements. You know, is it an intentional denial from somebody who really should know better? And we'll discuss in a minute what that means. Or is it a understandable mistaken belief, either as a result of a limited education or a result of a flawed philosophical process, but somebody who's sincere and comes to a mistaken belief, how much is that going to be held against him as far as animus is brought to him? Now again, he's missing out. He's missing out on the whole tachlis of life. That's huge. So then, from that perspective, it's clearly a loss, and that's what we want to try to help. But as far as the blaming, so then that would presumably be much more fluctuating. And also the question of, we're talking about just an internal belief, because everybody is going through a process all the time. So, you know, you have to, everybody has their ups and downs, but presumably we're talking about how it's being taught and how it's being used to undermine the whole system and to affect others. It's going to be calibrated to that also. And it's a very important nekuda to appreciate. And the one thing I wanted to make sure to get in before we finish the sugya is one of the most often quoted comments of the Chazon Ish. So I brought in the Sefer so I can read it to you directly. The Chazon Ish, this statement is very, very widely cited, and it's actually two different paragraphs to call to your attention. Both of them are essentially on our sugya in Yoredei and Hilchos Shechita and Siman Beis. So this Chazon Ish, which is quoted very, very frequently and hugely significant theologically, is, we have the zchus to learn it keseder. This is what we're up to. This is on our sugya in the beginning of Chulin. So there's two important paragraphs which I will read to you selectively, but they're both in Siman Beis. Then we'll first go to the end. That two questions we need to address. You know, when somebody is labeled as, let's say, a Rasha, with a tremendous stigma that might come from that, and many other halachos that may come from that, so what kind of a judgment are we making? And two, what is the purpose of a very negative attitude towards those who are labeled with such kinds of status? So first, if you look at the very end of the Chazon Ish's comments in Siman Beis, so it's Sifkat and Chavches. So here he brings in Mummer in other contexts. And he talks about the definition of a Mummer Lahachis. And he talks about whether a Mummer has to specifically be somebody who just does have Eros, or whether he's also somebody who actually wrote Defachar Ha'isr. You know, so he's not even willing to take the heter when it's equally available, but he actively chases the Isr. And he's V'chein Kofa B'tarish Ba'peh, So also the idea of denying a Torah Shebaal Peh, right, is davcha bekofer gam beikar ol ha-mitzvos, specifically because this comes with denying the ol ha-mitzvos. It's important to understand also, just without getting into some major contemporary controversies, but you know, the whole question of why are we so upset about Christianity? I mean, the question is belief in a resurrected Messiah and the like, and the Trinity. All of these are clearly serious issues, but we can't also ignore the fact that a part of the message of Christianity was a revision of the whole set of obligations, was a throwing out of the practicality of the Torah. So there were major theological concerns, but the theological concerns were also connected to major practical concerns. So we have to keep a focus on what contributes to what. So here, kofar gam ikar ha mitzvos. The person kofar Torah b'al peh is kofar, specifically is kofar on the burden of the mitzvos. And here's a crucial term. It says, v'od yesh bazet tnai shelo yehe anus. So there's also a condition here that this person's mistaken beliefs or practices should not be unavoidable, should not be something that's forced upon him. So what do we mean by anus here? We're not going to blame him if he's anus. So what do we mean? We mean that he's held at gunpoint? Is that what the definition of anus is? So no. We don't mean that he's actually physically compelled. We mean much less than that. So first he quotes the Rambam. It says, the Rambam, Perek Gimel, Mehilchos Mamrim, Halacha Gimel. So he says, the stigma there, the Rambam talks about the stigma that's given to the first generation of those who rebel against the Torah. But he goes on to say, the B'neihem v'talmidehem chashivi ke'anusim, that their children and their students, they don't know any better. So that's also on this, not because they're at gunpoint, but because that's the tradition they received. Uketinok shenishba. And that is like a baby that was kidnapped at birth. Wasn't provided with an education. So such a person, we have full responsibilities toward mitzuvan on al-hachiyoso, v'aflachal of shabbos, v'pil hatzloso. You have to protect him, you have to care for this person. U'v'hagos maimini perigvav milchus deis. Here, this is another very ikker part of the discussion, right? So what have we established so far? That none of this negativity applies if you're an honest. That was step one. Step two, honest doesn't mean that you're held at gunpoint, but it means just that you don't know any better. But what does it mean not to know better? So here is a third stage that is crucial. So he quotes from the Gos Maimini Paragvav Melchus Deis, Kasov De'ein Rishoyin Lesnoso Ela Acher She'enu Mekabel Teichocha. So you have to be the person who rejects Teichocha. Now, okay. What do you think?
That's not knowing better.
Yes. That you're still, this definition of honest, apparently all is one line, that if you're not, that in order to rise to the level of being responsible, means that you are somebody who is not only a sinner, but you ignore tochacha. So you might think, okay, well, there's plenty of that. You know, it's not so hard to find somebody in that level. So here goes, Besof Sefer Avos Chesed. Who wrote the Avos Chesed? Chafetz Chaim. Right, so the author of Chafetz Chaim, the Chafetz Chesed, Kasa V'Shem Hagri Molin, De Mitzvah Lehovis HaRashoyim Mehai Taima. That therefore, because this is the standard, we have to love the Rashoyim. The Hevi came Mitzvahs Meram Lublin, Ki Yitzleinu Hukodim Tochacha. That nowadays, it's all considered to be before Tochacha. Why is that? It's because the Gemara in Erechin, he doesn't cite the reference here, but he just paraphrases it, She'ein anu yoldim lohochiach. That we don't know how to give Musa. And that's the Gemara. Gemara already says in the time of Chazal that we no longer have the art of Tochacha. Now that is a very crucial point. Because what are we saying? That we're saying that the message has to come in a way that the individual is able to appreciate what it's saying. And there are so many different things that interfere, whether it is an inconsistent message, what is sometimes called hypocrisy nowadays, although I think that term is overused. We could talk about that a different time. But whether it's that and the Gemara suggests as much, that when a person is a flawed messenger, often that impacts on how the message gets across. Even though one could say that that's not wise, you know, if somebody is, you know, we should be makabel the emes b'misha omro, and if somebody is telling you the truth, so then you should be makabel it anyway. But the metzius is, in real life, it's hard for people to be able to take a message from a flawed messenger. And we are all flawed messengers nowadays. And we also deliver the message in a flawed way. Because sort of Bakshi Daron in his Chuvis, I think, writes that seems to be a stira, because the Gemara says, and again, there's already a time of Chazal, now we're so far removed from that, but the Gemara says that you should not say something that's not going to be received. That kishem sheish mitzvah lomar davar hanishma, kacheish mitzvah lo lomar davar she'en hanishma, just like it's a mitzvah to say what's going to get through, you should not say something that's not going to get through. But the Gemara also says that you have to be machiach somebody even 100 times. So it sounds like a stira. How could they both be true? You shouldn't say things that aren't being listened to. And you should say it 100 times. Sounds like it's not being listened to the first 99 times. So he explains that it's all about how you present the message. That the message should be conveyed in such a way that even if you said it 100 times, it's not going to lose its effectiveness. It's not going to irritate the other person and say, you're harassing me. It's a very, very subtle art. And if this is true, so it's not simply about did a person have a yeshiva education or not, did he grow up in a religious household or not. Because it seems to me, very muchach, that even if a person was provided with the factual education, but if the context is such, it's not necessarily the fault of his teachers or his parents, it may just be the broader environment or other aspects that are compromising the message. But if the fact is, it's not just a question, does he know Shabbos exists, but does he understand why Shabbos is important? Does he understand why Shabbos is binding? Can he relate to that as far as it's being taught? So if that's all missing, so then the Tocha is not effective. So he's not rebellious in ignoring Tocha. He's not getting the message. The Tocha is not there. And this is all essentially in the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was always thought of as the big Machmir, big Kanoi, and, you know, the king of Bnei Brak. But essentially here, this is not a hidden quote. This is one of the most frequently quoted statements. But it's not always fully appreciated just what all of its significance is. And again, we have the opportunity to see it in this context here. That's a very powerful thing. So he goes on to say, so therefore, we are all in the context of Einanu Yoidim Halchiach, V'dainina Lu Kanusim. So the status is like an honest. Status is like somebody of a choice. So he was talking about Yibum before, so he says, L'chein Yef Shalana Lodun Bazel Liftar Min HaYibum. So we can't say that they're like non-Jews apart from Yibum. And then he adds, and you question how far to take this, because clearly there has to be some limit, but the last words, this is just the closing words in the Siman, says, V'chein Le'inyin Shar Halachas. And so too for other purposes, that seems to be his bottom line. So that's a very crucial position. Now he has another often quoted relevant paragraph, which is earlier in the same siman, in siman beis. And this is Sifta Zayin. These are both very often quoted ideas. It's easy to think they're in the same paragraph. They're both here in the same piece, two separate paragraphs, but they each one gets quoted with equal frequency. So he's talking about one of the dinim that we find in the context of maybe a Mamar Lahachis or an Apikoros. So the Gemara talks about the Maridin Vein Mailin, we would let the harm come to them and feel an obligation to protect them. So here, crucial Yisod. So here, Chazon Ish says, this is the very last paragraph in Beis Tazayin. Says, Nira De'ain Din Maridin, the whole din of Maridin, so that we would let the harm come to Ela Bizman Shahashkechaso Yisbarach Guluya. And that the whole concept only makes sense when God's providence is overt and is essentially visible, literally visible, because it goes on to say, "Kamo bizman shehayu nisim b'tzuyin u'mishamish pasko." We have literally voices coming out of heaven that people can hear, and there are overt miracles going on. V'tzadike hador tachas hashgacha pratis hanireis la'ein kol. Right, you can see that the people who are tzaddikim are being taken extra care of. So literally visible, God's presence in the world. Then, v'hakoyfrim, oz, who ben elizus miyuchedas batoyes hayetz l'taytus v'avkeri. So somebody who's going to be kofar on that, somebody who's going to deny that, that's real intentional rebellion against the obvious truth that's in his face. And a person is making a fully informed choice to say, okay, I would rather follow my desires and my anarchistic instincts. I see God's presence right in front of me. I literally see it. I see the miracles. I hear his voice from Shemayim. I see how the tzaddikim are given special care. And still, I'm choosing hefkeris. I'm choosing anarchy. And I'm choosing to follow my desires. Okay, so fine. So then, that's real kfir. Then, in such a case, so then, okay, it would be a wall, it would be a defense for the world to get rid of the Rishayim. Shakol yedu ke adachas ador, maybe peranis la'olam, or maybe devi v'chev v'rab ba'olam. Okay, we all see that they're causing the problems. Aval bizman ha'helem, but in the time when things are hidden, shenichrisa ha'muna mendela sa'am, faith has been cut off. So then, doing something bad, this guy is not going to fix the breach. It's going to add to the pirtza. Right? And this is, again, he's adding another crucial point here, and this is very, very important for policies of interaction. Bizman Hazen, I think this part is, as much as this is quoted, I think there are subtleties within the way the Chazon Ish presents it that are not fully appreciated, as much as these two paragraphs are very frequently quoted. But he adds, he says, any negativity towards those who are not on this path. So, Bizman Hazeh, that people don't understand what it's about. And you see, it's defining Bizman Hazeh very broadly, because, you know, in order to be responsible, you need nisim guluyim. So it says, in the absence of nisim guluyim, an overt, visible hashgacha. So any negativity towards people who don't believe, how will that be perceived? It says, it's not going to be geder hapirza. El hosafis hapirza, that's going to increase the breach. Shiyah beinayhem kemaisa hashchasa valimus chas v'sham. Right, so that's a crucial point, which we often don't appreciate. That you're saying that it's not only that negativity towards whatever word you want to use, then we should soften the word. Then you're saying negativity towards the misinformed. So the negativity is not only not warranted, saying it accomplishes the opposite. Because that is perceived as undermining the Torah's message itself. So that's not only useless, it's going to be itself the pirtza. The cave in shekol atzmo latakein, since the whole purpose here is to fix the problem. Ein hadin noeg b'sha shein bo tikun. So the whole concept doesn't apply at a time when there is no tikun, when it's not going to help anything. So here, this next line is hugely quoted, very familiar line. So what is our responsibility? Our responsibility is to pull them back with pulls of love, ulahamidam bekeren ora, and to stand them in the process of the ray of light, b'meshiyadenu magas, to whatever extent that we can. So this is an incredibly important point to consider, and again, Chazanish, just to think about some of the nuances of what he's saying, and just to highlight what they are again. So the part that's quoted, okay, says that nowadays a lot of these negative dinim, maybe all these negative dinim, it's not clear, don't really apply because people don't know any better. So that's itself enough of a chiddush. But there's chiddush upon chiddush, because he says, what does it mean to know? So you see from here, know means you have to actually have it in your face undeniably. And to really be a kofer means to see God's presence in this world physically, see miracles, hear voices from heaven, see tzaddikim taken care of, and still decide, I choose option B. And we said in the end of the siman that failing full responsibility of the status of an anus. And an anus doesn't mean just you have a gun to your head, doesn't mean that you're lacking education. It means, presumably, even if you're exposed to all the facts, but you don't have the framework in which to appreciate its importance. You have to say that, because otherwise, what do you mean we don't know how to give tochacha? Of course we know how to give tochacha. Tell the guy in the street, Jim Michal Shabbos, which gave tochacha. So you see, it's not about just informing the person of what the Torah requires. You see that there's a lot more to what tochacha is. Otherwise, the Gemara wouldn't say that already in the time of the Chazal, we don't know how to do it anymore. So until we can live up to our responsibilities to figure out how to give tochacha properly, so then you can't blame people for not fully appreciating what it's about. And that's what he ends off here, that the message is that we have to use the bonds of love and the rays of light to try to do whatever we can. And also this crucial point, to understand that how things are perceived is also a major part of it. So when somebody is understood as an intentional threat to our communal values, and it's understood that responding negatively to that is going to fix things, so then that's one context. But in the environment in which the whole negative response is itself going to be taken as something that's going to push people farther away, so then the whole thing is pointless. So it's all crucially important stuff. There's much literature in general about the whole question, especially when we talk about Amum Rechal Shabbos and some of the dinim. So what about Bizmanenu? There's a lot to talk about how intentional people are with Chil Shabbos, how much they know, how much they appreciate. What do people really understand? And just want to mention as a very important Marim Malkum, and they will end with this, but it was a great Talmud Chacham who was privileged to know Rabbi Shlomo Werman, Zichrono Levracha, who was Rabbi and Henk. He was Mechaber of many, many Sfarim, at least about 11 all told. But the first volumes he wrote were under the title Sheiris Yosef. Sheiris Yosef's unbelievable sefer. He would just go through Kol Torah Kula. Each volume was about all of Shas, basically. And he would go through the sugyas that he went through in tremendous depth and iyun and bekiyas. It was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham. It used to be that the Sfarim were precious in another way, in a more literal sense, because he only published, however many volumes, and there was more interest than there actually were. And there was a waiting list for people to die so you could take their Sheiris Yosefs. And it wasn't too easy to obtain. I remember the tremendous simcha I felt when I completed my set. It was not easy. Nowadays, we are zeichet to tremendous things. Among them, the website called HebrewBooks.org, which makes many, many Sfarim available anywhere in the world at the click of a mouse. So all of the writings, I think all of the writings of Rabbi Werman are available online on HebrewBooks.org. So used to be you needed major connections to get a hold of these Sfarim. Now they're all available on Hebrew Books. So But I don't know how many Sfarim are like that. They're like, you know, so you have to really just keep track of how many copies there were in the world so you could hunt them down. So, in any event, in Chelik Beis, in Siman Zayin, I believe, so he has a tshuva, and it was written to one of his students. And the question was, if we assume that a Mechal Shabbos can aser wine with his touching it or moving it, there's a whole discussion, I'm not getting into all the pratim of that right now. So this boy was in a difficult position because his father made Kiddush at home on Shabbos. And his father made Kiddush because he was, in general, an observant person and kept Shabbos as much as he could. But he felt he couldn't make a living otherwise, so he would go to open his store. You know, the nowadays the Hashkama minion in the shul is very often the front minion where people learn the rest of the morning after they daven early. But they're not aware maybe that the origin of the Hashkama minions in America was originally people were going to work. They would daven early Shabbos morning because they would go to work afterwards. So it's, you know, hard for us to wrap our heads around that nowadays such a thing is possible. Zochel, a lot of things are a lot easier. But so this tshuva was written that this, you know, this boy's father was doing that essentially. He was opening up a store. So the question was, did this create a problem for the boy to drink from the Kiddush wine of his father's cup? So my woman went through all the different stadim very carefully. And what exactly is the malacha involved in opening the store? A lot of details that were relevant. What exactly is the story about Yayin? He goes through all the details of this. And he goes through a lot of the literature that Bizman Hazeh, that how exactly we judge people in terms of their nisyonos. It's possible to make a very different case. What's really called the Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. In America, there was, you know, literature about this, Binyan, or Kiva Eger had shufas about this. So he brings all of those, as one would expect. He always was very thorough. And he came to the conclusion that it was mutter for this boy to drink his father's Kiddush wine. So that's all worth reading by itself. But after that, he has an addendum to the tshuva, because apparently he was attacked. Attacked by Talmud Chacham of some stature. I don't know who it was, doesn't name who it was. But this person attacked him on various pratim and said, aside from the details, he says, you know, who needs a terim like this? You know, why would you, what's, you know, even if you were a defensible position, why do you need to, what's the value in such an attitude? So Rabbi Werman responded very thoroughly to that as well. And in addition to defending all of the original positions that he brought, he said, your question, who needs this? This is the Masara that I have. He says, this is what we're meant to do. Now, we are meant to try to express love to those who are in a difficult position philosophically and religiously, and try to do what we can to bring them back and to try to convey that attitude. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's what I think was my tafkid. And it's a very powerful essay to read, both the first part and the addendum. Again, it's all available on HebrewBooks.org. I think it's Siman Zayin, Chelik Beis, the Sheris Yosef. And of course, he refers to Chazanish as well. As again, that's not his Chiddush. Everyone refers to this Chazanish, very commonly quoted source. But it's a very important way, I think, to close off this whole discussion of Mummer and Apikoros and the like. So we have to do what we can to try to uphold the actual values of the Torah, make sure that people are exposed to the truth as we understand it, and do what we can to strengthen that message and to make sure it doesn't get eroded in any way. But the individuals who struggle with that, we have a big tradition here about how that should be addressed, Bizman Hazeh, and what our obligation. And I think the bottom line of the Chazon Ish really is that what comes out from all of these paragraphs is that if there are those who are far away from Torah, maybe it's more our fault than it is theirs, and we have to do what we can to make sure that the message is being conveyed effectively, powerfully, with love, or with concern. And until we can do that, then we have to worry about our own problems and try to make sure that we are doing what we need to do. Okay, so again, that's what we will I'll close our discussion for now about the Mamir and the like. So tomorrow, we said before that tomorrow will be Parshas Kisavo, Rishon of Kisavo. If we have time to talk a little bit about Slichas, maybe we will, but we'll see. We also have Shir Lunch at 12. So that's first. That'll also impact on our time. Okay, well, let's figure that out. And then Sunday, I have to discuss what time Shir will be on Sunday. We'll let you know tomorrow. It's a very, very busy day on Sunday. A lot of events. So we'll have to figure that out. And then we'll have... But Sunday we'll have to talk about Rosh Hashanah, because it's our only time to talk about Rosh Hashanah before that day comes. And then we'll have the rest of the week. We'll try to do...